Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It's good to be back. It's your weekly podcast. Where else would you be? And I keep asking this, and people do keep on telling me, by the way, that they are walking the dog, going to work on the bus. Couple of other things that I probably should never ever repeat, so I'm not going to repeat those ones. But anyway, it's nice to know where you're listening to us, and we do really appreciate all the downloads and everything else. At this point of the program, I always welcome my co-hosts, and I always normally go to Jack first and then go to Ryan second, but this week at the top of the program I've only got Jack to go to. So after the disrespectful comments, which I'll be being severely reprimanded for since last week when I made reference to work experience, which I'll never ever do again, for obvious reasons, because I'll get beat up by Jack. But Jack Bennion, you're at the top of the show, you're promoted, you're my right-hand man. Hello.
Hello, how are we doing?
We're really good. And yeah, as I say, I'm quite excited this week because it's Rally Porsche. We're kind of back in the realms of WRC, and we've got stuff to talk about, and we've got the DMAC Drive thing coming up. Perhaps a little bit later on, I've reached out to a couple of drivers, and as we're doing this at the moment, we may get one of the drivers with us a little bit later on, but I don't want to sully or timeline the intro of the program by saying we're going to have some that we don't. So we could have somebody coming up a little bit later on, and yeah, we're working towards that literally as we record this anyway. But at the top of the program, as ever, we always have Jack on, obviously from NN, and we always kind of work our way through the headlines and what's going on in the world, and then we go to news and rumours, and then we even do a little bit of any other business. Jack, have you got a cracker for us this week?
I hope so.
All right, good. All right, fine. Well, we'll come to that. It's weird because Ryan's not with us today, but he's going to be with us for the end of the program because we're going to get him on to do his any other business. And I've sent him away to come up with a cracking piece of homework. Last week's actually was really good when we got to, as you say, you raised the bar, Jack. I'm going to give you some credit. Right, you raised the bar of the any other business. And I'll be honest, I haven't got mine yet. And mine's kind of formulating as we speak, and I think I know where I'm going to go with it, and I think it's going to be quite predictable, bearing in mind where I went on the last couple. But anyway, I'm wittering on, and we're not talking about headlines, Jack, and that's what we're here to do. So I wanted to open up and kind of do some kind of chronological order before we get to Rally Portugal. I wanted to talk about this headline today with regards to Rally GB and Circuit of Ireland could rotate in the WRC.
Yeah, it's a big story running this week. There's been a lot of talk in the past about the Circuit of Ireland and what its aspirations are and where it wants to go. And I don't think there's any secret that they want to be a WRC event. And one of the issues WRC is facing at the minute is an unprecedented demand for events. You know, we've got so many events who are wanting to come onto the calendar, and we've got this agreement in place that says we only have 14 events to keep the cost down for teams. So there's a small number of events, if you like. Well, maybe not small. I mean, I think 16. The most they've had in the past, but we've got 14 events, and we've got many more rallies trying to get on the calendar and trying to add themselves in. So the story we've run this week, we've got a few quotes, various people involved, Ben Taylor, Bobby Willis, and then we've got Yama Mahonen and Oscar Chesler as well. So just speaking to people about how potentially GB could rotate with the circuit over a few years, and that could be the way to keep our place on, well, the British place on the calendar, if you like, safe.
I guess the debate, if it is a debate, there's a thing. Let's talk about the Circuit of Ireland, which is obviously the round that we're talking about here that could rotate. I personally don't see it, and I'll come back to that point in a minute. But the love and the passion for motorsport, and not just rallying, you know, we just had the Northwest 200 over there. I'm massively into my road racing with bikes. I'm off to the TT in a couple of weeks' time, and that's normally the warm up for the TT. Now, again, we start talking about tarmac rallying over there, which is huge. The passion and the drive to have a major competition over on the circuit and make the circuit around the WRC is phenomenal. Right, so you've got the fans, you've got the fans. I think the infrastructure's there. I think the events that was put on for ERC, I don't think it would take much more to ramp that up for a WRC event. But then you've got the other side of it, the commercial side. And the commercial side is what took us to China this year. And, you know, will we have rally fans out in China to the extent that we're going to have rally fans on Circuit of Ireland? No. And therein lies the problem, I think. I think it's the politics and the finances and everything else of what takes us to these different events is kind of skewed a little bit, because while rally drivers probably won't rally fans to create that atmosphere, and they want the buzz in the service park and everything else. Are some of these other events, you know, is the passion? I'll use China. I feel like I'm picking on it a little bit here, which is brave of me. Let's be honest with you. Nobody picks on China, but will it have that same buzz and that same feel for rallying? I don't think it will. But the team bosses and the manufacturers need to go there because they want to do it for car sales and everything else. I think that's what the big problem is, to be honest with you, Jack.
Yeah, it's a trade-off, isn't it? You know, we see it in lots of other motorsports as well. You know, Formula One, we've seen increasingly go out to countries in Asia and places like that where maybe the fans aren't necessarily the most passionate in the world. But, yeah, it's like I say, it's a trade-off between going to places that is a test for the drivers, a place where the fans are there to watch, a place where, you know, the infrastructure is there, and a place where the economy sort of welcomes rallying. And at the same time, it's got to be commercially viable for both the events and for the championship. So it's not a new problem. It's one that's been around for many years and one that's been involved in motorsport for a long time. Where we go next with it is kind of up to the events and up to the WRC organisers. So it's just it's a waiting game to see who's involved and who isn't, really. You know, we've seen a lot of rotation in the past in the WRC, a lot of events changing, and you know, it'd be ideal for the WRC, really, if they could have a rotation of events over a set number of years. But that obviously doesn't always work for the incumbent events that are there to start with. So it's a difficult problem to solve, especially, you know, it's a good problem in the sense that there's so many events that want to come into the WRC, obviously doing something right, and the series is obviously doing well. But at the same time, it's difficult for the WRC to accommodate them in a way which is, you know, good for all the events involved.
I think the other thing as well is that the case in point here, and we've tweeted stuff, and there's been stuff on Facebook about it, and we talk about Hayden Padden, we talk about New Zealand, and we talk about New Zealand wanting to come back to the, you know, the World Rally Championship, and that was meant to be a rotation with Australia, and it hasn't quite worked.
No, that's true. You know, it's something that hasn't quite come to fruition yet, and we know Hayden's pushing really hard to try and get rallying back in New Zealand, and this is maybe evidence of, you know, what we've discussed already. You know, New Zealand has some of the best gravel roads in the world. I don't think too many people had argued with that, but they haven't got an event, and, you know, that just proves that there's other reasons beyond the fans and the stages. You know, there are a lot of elements to take into account when organising a WRC event. You know, these aren't small events. They take a lot to put on, and they take a lot of commercial influence as well to make them happen. So yeah, it's, you know, it's obviously sad we haven't got New Zealand, and there's many other places in the world I'm sure we'd like to go as well, but like we've said already, there's only 14 spots, and they've got to be filled by the events that can definitely go ahead and the events that can definitely run.
I think that, you know, it would be great, I suppose. It's like that fantasy, you know, fantasy pick, isn't it, where yeah, you would put absolutely your WRC and where your calendar would be. And as you say, there's plenty of events out there that I think, from a fan point of view, from a quality of stages point of view, and I don't think you could question that, you know, the infrastructure is, you know, let's use New Zealand, the infrastructure would definitely be there for them to have a WRC round, as it would be for the Circuit of Ireland as well. All the infrastructure's there, but commercially, and commercially, I suppose, for the manufacturers, the reasons are not there. You know, obviously, having Northern Ireland and a UK event, obviously Wales Rally GB, To the outside world, to the FIA, it's almost one and the same, isn't it? I think that's the unfortunate thing. But, you know, again, what didn't we have, just like, while I'm thinking on, didn't we have a situation where we had two French events?
Yeah, I think we did a few years ago, didn't we?
Yeah. So I know obviously
what happened.
I remember one, because obviously it was kind of went through Loeb's Village, didn't it? I think that was the whole kind of thing. I think it was in the heyday of Seb Loeb. Now, did we have Rally France and we had Corsica, which technically...
We'd have to look that one, aren't we?
Yeah, right, I need to double check that. That's just come to me there anyway. But anyway, we'll crack on. I think there's more to come. I genuinely don't see how... I don't think IMS and Wales Rally GB... I think they would be very much on the back foot. I think with all what's going on in the world with rallying, especially in Wales at the moment, is that they can't afford to let, you know, the Welsh, you know, the Welsh money that they get to put that event on. They can't afford to let that slide for 3 years, because trying to get that back again in 3 years time would be, I would envisage, to be near on impossible. And then to give it to somebody, or to rather loan it to the event to someone like Bobby Willis in the Circuit of Ireland, Bobby's not going to want to give it up either. I think once he'd got it, it'd be like a dog with a bone as well. So, I could see it. There'll be some friendly handshakes, but I don't see GB willing to give it up, and I could see Bobby more than happily take it from them. So I think it's going to be a watch this space one, unfortunately. I think it's going to be a watch this space.
Yeah, well, it's all speculation at the minute. You know, this is just a very new story that we've just put together, and you know, it is speculation. But you know, the thing we've got to look at is the WRC are looking at the events going on in Wales now and thinking, you know, are we going to get GB? You know, you can't put that doubt in the organisers' mind in a certain way. So, you know, the WRC are looking at things and thinking, you know, can GB sustain itself in Wales over the next few years? And, you know, they'll be looking to try and make sure that Britain has got an event, because it is a key place for the WRC to go. So it is, like we've said, all speculation, and I'm sure much more will come out in the next few weeks regarding the future of the event.
Sure, mate, it's a cracking point because we forget that people outside of out of the UK and Wales and everything else, you know, with the way the internet is now and things like that, you know, it doesn't take a lot for people to start seeing stories about what's going on in Wales anywhere in the world. And you know, it would be very interesting to hear from somebody with regards to, you know, has the FIA made any contact? Has the FIA even asked the question, have we got any issues here potentially? Do we need to start thinking about this already? Because, you know, come June, we potentially are not going to have rallying in Wales.
It's a, you know, it's a really difficult situation to be in. Like you said, you know, the days of the internet and social media just ramp things up a bit. And, you know, social media can be used so well and can be used to really great effect, but it can also highlight problems that maybe wouldn't have been so obvious that were there before. So it's a difficult time in Wales. We all know that. You know, we spoke about it quite a bit over the past few weeks, and, you know, I don't think we need to go too much into it again after, with the elections taking place and there's a new government coming in. So there's a lot of, you know, it's a difficult situation to try and work out what's going to happen at the minute while they're reorganising the government. But yeah, like I said, it's a worrying time when people can look and see what's going on in Wales, and that's why this campaign, Rally for Wales, is so important, that everyone gets behind it and we do our best to try and pressure these guys into making a deal.
Happy days. Well, hopefully everything will be sorted. Obviously, we had Jamie on last week. We're hoping to have some more people coming on next week. I think possibly we're going to have Nicky Griss coming on, talking about what's going on and what they're trying to do in order to continue, you know, to make people aware of what's going on. I know after there was a national event in Wales over the weekend, which is a BTRDA round, which former DMAC Drive front runner and current BRC front runner Tom Cave actually won outright in a Fiesta R5. But there was a lot of teams on that who were tweeting photographs of receipts and showing just how much money they had spent on the event, you know, in restaurants and bars and hotels and things like that, which again needs to happen. It needs to happen, but we need to find a way of engaging. We can't use that just the threat of the business elements of it. We've also got to find a way of engaging. You know, what I still call it, the Forestry Commission. What's the abbreviation? It's National Resource Wales.
NRW. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, we need to find a way of engaging and talk to them about, you know, the stages and the quality of the stages and the damage and what they're getting quoted and, you know, how we can perhaps find a better way of repairing these roads and taking responsibility perhaps for what rallying's doing to their roads as well. I just think there's so much more to that, and hopefully everybody can get around a table and put something together on it anyway. But moving on, again, we always seem to mention Hayden at the moment, because as I say, he's a popular dude after his last win, but he was popular before that anyway. But padding ready to fight OJ in a level playing field, Jack.
Yeah, he's going to be running a lot closer to OJ now on the road. So he's given us some quotes this week about how he's feeling about running up front and kind of putting his money where his mouth is, I guess, after the last round when he and OJ had a bit of a disagreement about running order and where, you know, OJ's discontent lied. Padden's obviously run at the front of the road a lot in his native New Zealand in National Rally, and so he's kind of used to it. He's not really used to it at WRC level though, so we're really going to get a good idea of where he's at and how close A, Paddon is to OJ, and B, how close the new Hyundai is to the Volkswagen. So it'd be really interesting battle this weekend in Portugal, I think.
Now we're kind of by default going into Hyundai corner, and Trevor Agnew and I have been talking about this. You'll hear that a bit later on in the podcast. And Trevor and I have been talking about, obviously Trevor is massively into driver coaching and, you know, talking about mindsets and things like that. And again, we come back to Thierry Neuville, the crash on pre-Portugal test. He wasn't going to be a point scorer anyway. He's got the next two gravel rounds to kind of sort himself out, but something's just not right.
Yeah, strange one really. He's had another shunt in testing after crashing in Mexico. So it's been a bit of a tough start to the year, especially how much talk we had at the end of last year about how he really needs to pick his game up after a very difficult year last year. Obviously being dropped from the main Hyundai team for GB at the end of the year, and he had all summer to kind of ponder his year and how it had gone. Obviously, it's not been the best start. Well, it was quite a good start to the year in a sense. In Monte Carlo, he had a good result there and scored quite a few points. But after that, it seemed to have it's the nuts come out of the bolt, if you like. Again, it's been a bit of a testing few events for him, and this is just the next sort of downside in line, really.
Have you been working on that analogy? The nuts come out of the bolt.
No, I'll be honest, I couldn't think what to say, so it just came out.
No, to be fair, mate, it's got legs. It might need a bit polishing, that's all.
Yeah,
absolutely. It seemed a bit clunky. Just a thought.
I'll stick to the pen and paper, I think.
Yeah, come on. But a man that we've been missing without a shadow of a doubt, but he's been a busy man, is Chris Meakin. Of course, he is back on Portugal in the Abu Dhabi Total DS3, and he's been more than missed. He's playing down his chances on Portugal. He admits he's not short of seat time. I was going to say face time, then that'll be weird, wouldn't it? But not short of face time, seat time. And but I don't know. I don't know what, obviously, road position and things like that. He's not fighting for a championship. He I suppose you could argue he's driving for the joy of it.
Absolutely. You know, I looked at this story with a wry smile when it came through, and I was very interested to see this, because one of the things I've been thinking about for the past sort of week while we've been thinking about Portugal coming up is I think Meek's really going to be in the battle for the win, to be honest, and that road position is really going to give him an advantage. And, you know, he's talking about maybe not being quite match fit in terms of competition, but as soon as Meek gets back in that car, you can be sure that he'll be going all out. And I think personally, the fact that he's not got anything to drive for is something that's really going to allow him to relax this weekend and really just sort of get into his groove, find a nice rhythm. And I think we'll, you know, if we don't see him up front, I'll be very surprised this weekend.
Yeah, again, road position is going to come into play massively, and I think that will lend itself to the fact that Chris is driving just for the sake of driving in many ways. Obviously, he's doing what he has to do for Abu Dhabi and for Total, obviously, who are the guys who are obviously funding the PH Sports program this year. But I like the thought of Chris Meek off the leash. That's all I'll say.
It's amazing, isn't it, that, you know, he's a driver who you completely associate with driving for his career on a rally by rally basis, basically over his WRC career and for a lot of his for other parts of his career as well. You know, he's always been a driver who's been all out trying to secure a drive and trying to impress people, and it's so nice to see him in a situation where he can just turn up and just let himself loose. And I don't think we've seen that kind of Chris Meek too often, so it'll be really good to see him this weekend and see where he's at in terms of pace compared to the other guys.
Fair, absolutely. Now, D-Mac Tyres, who seem to be everywhere at the moment, and you've got a headline here, D-Mac will bring British-produced covers to WRC this coming weekend. What's that one all about, Jack?
Yeah, D-Mac for the first time they're going to be using tyres that they've produced in the UK in Portugal, so it's a nice situation for them. It's also helped them sort of develop the tyre, because previously the tyres were made in China, so if they did a test in Cumbria and they wanted to make small changes to the compound or the structure of the tyre, they would have to send it back to China with instructions of what they wanted doing and then receive the tyres back. So if you do that, you know, you've done a day's testing on a tyre that could have been improved maybe for the next day if you'd have made them in the UK. So while they've been producing these tyres, they've had the sort of the locality to improve the tyres and do it kind of not instantly, but much quicker than it would have been if you'd had to send them to China. So hopefully that's going to help them move forward. We've seen Oitanak's had a a mixed start to the year, really. I think he's had a couple of good results and maybe a few where you thought he might have pushed on a little bit more. So maybe we'll see where that tyres at in comparison to the Pirellis and the Michelins that are going to be used in Portugal and how Tannock gets on.
I think they are always going to be up against it, aren't they? Now, a couple of people that are going to be missing from Portugal, or rather one that screams out, and you've just mentioned Pirelli, and for some reason I always think him, it was always Kubica and Bertelli who ran on Pirelli's kind of during the period where Pirelli were out of the WRC, if you like. They've come back to the WRC, but Luca Bertelli is not going to be with us on Portugal this weekend. What's that one?
Yeah, Lorenzo Bertelli's done his ankle in playing football, so he's going to be missing from Portugal, unfortunately. Shame really, because I think Grizzly Rich Mona was talking about how Lorenzo's adapted well over the past couple of years, and he's not quite been a front runner or a sort of mid table guy. He's usually sort of at the bottom end of the top 10, but improving very quickly for a person with very little experience. And it would have been nice to see where he was at in Portugal, but yeah, he's going to miss it through hurting his ankle playing football.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks. Accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. A couple of things I wanted to just kind of bring to kind of back in line. Seb Marshall, a friend of the show and a media guru now. We talked about the live stream coverage a bit later on in the programme with Trevor Agnew, and obviously Jack was part of that. So I didn't want to bring Jack in on that, because it would be weird talking to somebody about something that they've already done, because Jack's kind of part of the programme now. So it's weird to interview. I can't interview Jack. That would be odd. That's why I got Trevor anyway. But Seb Marshall, who is kind of Stage M reporter, I see him around service parks all the time and everything else. But him and Kevin Abering out in the 2015 car on Portugal, I think that's going to be a very interesting one, you know.
Yeah, it will be, absolutely. And it's nice to see those two guys back in the WRC. We saw him do really well in Corsica at points last year. Very quick on some of the wet stages there. Kevin's quite well known for his tarmac abilities. Maybe he needs to do a bit more on gravel, and this is a good opportunity for him to work with Seb on this. Seb, like you say, a bit of a media guru, lovely guy, very switched on and knows exactly what he's doing. Those guys have been testing the Hyundai R5 quite a lot, as we've alluded to quite a bit to start the year. So there'll be a switch of machinery then from the R5 to the back into a WRC car, but I'm sure they'll adapt very quickly, and it'll be interesting to see sort of how close they are to the new Hyundai. It's kind of taking a knife to a gunfight in a way, isn't it? But we can still compare times and see roughly where they're at, and hopefully they'll do well.
Now, it is also the opening round of the DMAC Drive Fiesta Trophy, and again we've been working very hard. I mentioned this at the top of the programme. We are working on trying to get one of the drivers. Unfortunately, at the moment, as we record this, things are quite busy for them over in Portugal, so we are obviously trying to grab one of the drivers literally as we speak. I'm not going to name the driver, because we've reached out to two, to be honest, so it's who comes back first. But one thing we are going to be doing, and we're going to go through some bits and pieces, but we're going to have one of the teams over here in the UK, Oshan Price, who I think is going to be one of the front runners. We've got Gus Greensmith, who's obviously our man, and he's going to be coming backwards and forwards in and out of the program over the course of the year, talking about what's going on and what's going on behind the scenes with testing and things like that for him. But again, I think even Gus kind of put his hand up, and Oshan's going to be the one. And Oshan's been spending a little bit of time using one of the cars that are run by Mike Harris Motorsport, and we're going to have Mike Harris Jr. joining us a little bit later on the program, telling us about what's been going on with Oshan, how that relationship came about. So we're going to be talking to him about what's going on and how he's hopefully going to keep supplying cars and give Oshan as much seat time as possible when he's out of the DMAC Drive Trophy. But just one headline I wanted to pick up on with regards to the DMAC Drive Trophy is we've mentioned him a few times now, Bernardo Souza. He's back and he's still one which I just think the incredible amount of seat time and knowledge that man has before he even turns a wheel surely has to put him at the front of the field.
Yeah, you'd expect him to be a front runner, wouldn't you? And you know, he was a relative front runner in WRC2 at times, so he's someone who's definitely got the ability. We know that, and maybe the only sort of drawback for him is that he hasn't driven a two-wheel drive car since 2006. So that's a fair while to jump back down into a two-wheel drive. But I'm sure he'll be on the pace, and I'm sure he'll be front running. Like you say, he's a very talented driver, and it'll just be interesting to see how quickly he can adapt to the two-wheel drive situation.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating. As I say, we're going to have a chat with Mike Harris from MH Motorsport a little bit later on, so we'll talk a little bit more about that now. The reason why I started giggling is because we've got to a headline with regards to the Junior WRC and ERC Junior and ERC 3 campaign. And you started giggling because the pair of us didn't pronounce the name correctly. Lucas Penetsky?
No, I don't think that's right.
No, all right, fine. Go on, you have a go then.
I think it's Pieniezak.
Pieniezak?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll take that. Are we still going with Lucas?
Yeah, Lucas, yeah.
Pieniezak.
There you go.
Okay, there you go. European Rally Championship frontrunner, junior frontrunner, is going to dovetail his campaign with the Junior World Rally Championship. What can you tell us about that? Because, the Junior World Rally Championship's kind of been lost, hasn't it? With the DMAC Drive thing has really come in, and I think the whole DS3 Max issue last year really did put the JWRC way, way back in terms of the place to go as a junior driver. So I don't quite understand how or why he feels the need to go and do this. But anyway, what can you tell us about the story, Jack?
Well, what I will say is my only other business is on JWRC, so I won't talk too much about that, and I'll leave that to my only other business. But Lucas is someone who really impressed on the circuit of Ireland, which turned out to be the opening round of the Junior European Rally Championship after Latvia was postponed, so it turned out to be the first round. Lucas turned up, and yes, Marion Griebel and Chris Ingram had a few issues in the Works Opel teams, but on pace, Lucas was right there in his privateer Opel in his first year in the car. Last year, he did ERC Junior in a Peugeot 208, and this is only his third year of rallying, so to be competing with that Opel outfit, if anyone who's in the circuit of Ireland saw the sort of finance and stuff that had gone into the Opel awnings and all the tents and how many mechanics and stuff they had on, you know, it'll be no, you will have known that it was no mean feat to beat those guys with their works efforts. So great performance in circuit of Ireland. Also did the last ERC round as well in ERC3, although it wasn't a counting round of the junior category. But he's also bought a Citroen DS3, and he's going to do the JWRC this year as well. So busy man this year, doing a few different categories, but he's definitely someone to watch. So little experience and really mixing it with the kind of front runners in junior rallying in the European Championship anyway. So it'd be really interesting to see where his pace is.
And it's a fascinating kind of process to, you know, to run two completely separate cars into completely different championships. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm not saying it's right. It's just one that where you think, you know, would it be easier and would he gain more from just focusing on driving one car and getting results that way and kind of being seen to be getting results that way? I don't know. I'm not saying it's right or it's wrong. I don't know what your thoughts are, mate, but I don't know. It's kind of left me a bit confused, that one.
It's interesting, but considering he's so inexperienced, you know, I kind of think it's quite a maybe a different idea, but also quite good in the sense that, you know, he's going to drive two cars all year. He's going to get loads of experience of loads of different rallies, and then next year, you know, if he does want to put his eggs in one basket, chances are whichever series he does, he will have had experience and maybe some pace notes of the rallies that he's going to do, and he'll have some experience in the car. So, you know, it's kind of, if you like, keeping his options open for next year. It's not maybe, even though this may sound stupid, it's not a this year decision, even though he's competing this year. It's you know, something maybe looking a bit forward for next year and what he's going to do there.
There's another headline here as well with regards to JWRC, where the name Loeb has come about again. What's this one about?
So Frenchman Terry Fall is a driver in the JWRC. I think he did all the rounds last year, or at least he did most of them, and finished the year quite strongly. But he's driving for Sebastian Loeb's team in that championship. So he's 25, Terry, and hoping to channel some of Loeb's skill set, I guess.
There you go. Now, to finish off the headlines, Frederick Arlin skipping Rally Finland to focus on BRC title push. Now, there's a headline that I would never have envisaged reading come 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, this is why, you know, I kind of jumped on this, because it's when you actually take the elements in and think about this story, it's massive, isn't it? You know, this driver's got a budget and definitely the ability to go and do Rally Finland, and he's turning it down to fight for the BRC. And, you know, if we'd have said that a year ago, you know, we didn't have a British Championship last year, and look at this now, someone's foregoing a Rally Finland entry to try and fight for the championship. So it's great for the BRC, obviously, but also shows Frederick's really serious about this championship and improving his tarmac form, because that's the big thing here. The thing is, we've got two tarmac rounds to finish the year, Ulster and Rally Isle of Man. So Frederick, in order to kind of fight for that championship, really does need to get a bit more tarmac experience, despite really impressing everyone in the circuit of Ireland with his pace there, after not being in a four-wheel drive car on tarmac for 4 years, and turns up and led the BRC for most of the event. So you know, very talented driver, and it's quite an interesting story, I think.
No, fair play. A couple of other things I just wanted to do, kind of tidy up on. Kajetan Kajetanovic is going to make his WRC debut on Rally Poland. I think that's going to be great to see, isn't it? That's going to be great to see how he kind of fares in that WRC2 category.
There was a lot of people who really impressed me on the circuit of Ireland, watching out on the stages there, and Kaito was one of the most committed of the lot, and I was really impressed with, you know, it was his second time in the circuit of Ireland. That's not an easy place to go and learn the place, and he's challenged for the win on both occasions that he's been there with Craig Breen. So, you know, he's clearly a very talented driver. I don't think he gets the credit he deserves, really, for his pace, and I think it's going to be really nice to see where he lies against those WRC2 guys, because the problem he's had in the ERC is he's had varying competition from different drivers. Obviously, Craig's car wasn't the most reliable in 2015, so it's going to be nice for him to go up against some of the best WRC 2 drivers that are in that championship, and just to see where his pace lies there.
Absolutely. Right, we've rattled our way through the headlines, which has took us quite neatly into half an hour. So before we go any further, I want to do our any other business, and okay. you've alluded to it already. JWRC.
Yeah,
well, so Jack Benyon, go on.
I kind of predicted we'd do a bit about the DMAC and, you know, a bit about the WRC2 and some of the other guys, and kind of not many people have sort of remembered that JWRC starting this weekend, really, and I think it was important to point out, because I think although we've discussed how good the Drive DMAC Trophy's been and how people seem to be flocking there, there's still a lot of good drivers entering the JWRC this weekend, starting with Emil Bergqvist, who some listeners will remember us talking about from the show. He was last year's ERC Junior Champion and got a prize drive to drive an R5 car in Valais at the end of the year in the ERC. He's done varying bits and bobs this year in R5 cars, but he's making his JWRC debut, because it's the first round of the series this year. But he'll be really one to watch. We've also got OC Baby, who we've talked about quite a bit as well, who's had some R5 experience at the start of the year. He's part of that management group that has a Pekka Lappi involved in it as well, so he's got a good group behind him. And he won Rally GB's JWRC round and WRC3 as well by quite a margin, which was very impressive. Watching him out on the stage, he's very committed. So those two, I think, will likely be front runners. And then two guys we've also talked about already, Lukas Pieniezek and Terry Folb. They'll both be interesting to see how quickly they can get up to speed and whether they'll be on par with Vaby and Bergqvist. And then we've got some series returnees like Simone Tempestini and Andre Cugnola. So there's plenty of talent there, although we've talked about quite a bit how maybe DMAC's taken over a little bit in terms of junior ranks. I'd like to put forward that the JWRC has got some very good drivers there, and it's maybe not a write-off as some people have maybe said.
No, I think, you know what, it's a very, very good point. I think probably from the Irish and Brit point of view, who did it last year, the Max kit was brought in, and I think many of them went through the process of almost they were shaking down the max kit for Citroën Racing, and I just think people had so many issues with the cars last year, and I think it left so many people, you know, I'm thinking of, you know, the Dan McKennas, etc. of this world. Yeah. And I'm trying to think of one of the other guys who did it, who name escapes me. I'd done BRC with a few years back, another Irish competitor. And is it John Byrne? No, maybe not. His name will come to me anyway. But those guys had to, you know, that you know, a DS3 isn't a cheap car to run, and a DS3 isn't a cheap car to buy. And then they got hit with the Max kit, and the Max kit wasn't cheap to buy either. And then they put the Max kit on, and then they were having problems. And I just felt for them, because I just felt they did a lot of public testing for the Max kit for the DS3. And I guess the guys this year will probably get something out of the fact that they did all that, all those, or not, maybe not as many kilometres as what they probably would have wanted, but they did a lot of kilometres testing cars last year, for them to go back to Citroën Racing and say, this bit isn't right, this bit's breaking, it's not quite right. And so I just felt for the guys there. And again, you know, good on the guys who have signed up to JWRC this year. Obviously, I think what's made the DMAC thing work has been the PR machine behind it has been phenomenal. And I think the fact that they choose the drivers as opposed to drivers choosing them, you know, there's only 10 seats available, makes it exclusive. Whereas JWRC, with all due respect to the guys that are there, you and I could, well, maybe not you could, I certainly couldn't, but you know, you could rock up tomorrow with a DS3 Max and go and do it.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'll take your point about the guys testing last year. I think it was very unfortunate, especially for you know, for some of the, you know, it's easy for us to get absorbed in it with the Brits. You know, we know these guys quite well, and you know, we see their plight and how much money they're putting in and how much time they're spending on their rally programs, which was absolutely awful. You know, we saw Ocean lead in a few of the events last year, and you know, his car let him down on a number of occasions, which is really unfortunate. I think the one thing to add though is that, you know, they didn't have so many retirements towards the end of the year last year, and they seem to have maybe not fixed all the problems, but they seem to have improved the reliability a lot. I watched very carefully on Rally GB at the end of last year the performance of the DS3s and how they were getting on, and there wasn't too many sort of the recurring problems happening that were happening at the start of the year. So, you know, hopefully they've got the car sorted out. And again, I do feel very sorry for the Brits that did it last year, but it looks like they've got most of the problems sorted. So that'll be a really good battle to see this year, and we've seen some very good drivers in there as well.
Fantastic. Jack, you've done a sterling job at the top of the show. Thank you very much.
No problem, my pleasure.
We're now going to have a little bit of a catch-up, all being well, with Mike Harris, as I say, from MH Motorsport. We're going to talk about him getting the likes of O'Shannon to use his car, and there's a couple of other people supposedly going to be using him in order to continue to get seat time as well, and some international drivers as well. So we're going to have a quick catch-up with Mike, then we're going to cross over to Trevor Agnew, and then we're going to go over to Ryan Champion for Is Any Other Business, because we don't know where he is today. Right, Jack and I, we kind of have, this sounds really dodgy, but we kind of have a three-way thing going on our text messages before anyone starts getting any mucky ideas. And we kind of go, we'll go back and forth, and we bounce around ideas and everything else. And then Ryan didn't even come to us with a note from his mum. He just said, I'm not there.
I saw a Facebook post before that may explain where he is.
And where is he?
I think it said he checked in Goodwood, so I think he might
he is.
Be...
Yes, he is a good one. He is. He's doing some coaching, I think, some driver coaching. So he's doing his proper day job. So maybe we should let him off the hook a little bit. But we're going to be finishing the program with Ryan Champion. It's quite weird not having him there, and the picture of his posh coffee before we start the program. Now,
I feel like I haven't woken up this morning because I haven't seen a picture of his coffee.
It's not this morning anymore, Jack. It's 25 past 12. Don't go student on me again. You know where that led last week. Listen, mate, have a cracking week. Same time, same place next week.
No problem. See you next week. Thanks for having me.
Cheers, Jack. See you soon.
See you later.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 441904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. It's good to be back, and it's good to be back with a bit of a friend of the show, former teammate of mine again. It's a bit of a theme running because I had an ex-teammate on last week as well. I don't know why, because they never normally speak to me when we're teammates. But Mike Harris of MH Motorsport was on with us at the beginning of the year when we did our kind of pre-season look forward when we did everything at Autosport Show. So it's good to welcome back Mike. Mike, welcome back to Absolute Rally, my mate.
Thank you very much.
It's good to, as I say, it's good to have you on. You've been a busy, busy man. You're a man that's run plenty of Fiesta R2s and the British Rally Championship and potentially beyond them. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on. But I mentioned at the intro of the programme, we had Jack Benyon on, of course, who always does the intro of the programme with me these days anyway. But we were talking now about, obviously, the DMAC Drive Trophy and how these guys are now looking to find ways to increase the seat time, because obviously it's an arrive and drive package in the WRC with M-Sport and with DMAC. So drivers are always looking for ways and means to increase that seat time. And you've had a couple of lads working with you, haven't you?
Yeah, we have. We had a couple of interesting phone calls. I've done a bit of work with a lad called Ocean Price that I'm sure everybody knows. He gave me a call wanting to come and sort of work with us. And at the same time, you know, we want to try and get as much information out of our car. So we've been working together with him, which has been really good, actually. It's been a good week last week.
Where did you go testing?
So we went down to Phil Price's, and then we followed it up a few days later down at Walters Arena. I think there was a big corporate day going on there, and we got amongst the corporate day, and Ocean went out and did a good, I would have thought he'd done a good sort of 35, 40 stage miles at Walters Arena, and it went really well. Got some great feedback from him in terms of the car, and he got his setup just the way that he wanted it moving forwards to Portugal. Which I think he'll go very well, to be honest. I think I was just surprised at how quick he was when he got straight in the car. He's no slouch, that's for sure.
I think we've all known that. And I think with Ocean, I think we've all kind of been waiting for him to have that rocket strap to his back and to see him kind of take off, because it's there. It's definitely been happening. He has had, you know, some hard luck stories. Jack and I have just been talking about JWRC last year and the campaign he had in JWRC and what was going on with the Citroën Racing, you know, the Max kit and everything else. So now he returns, funnily enough, and people forget that Ocean drove a Fiesta R2, geez, probably 6 or 7 years ago, maybe. I don't know. I might be adding time to that. It was a long time ago.
It was a long time. He'll openly admit to the fact that he didn't like get on too well with the R2 at the time, even though he was quick. He always is quick, but this car, he said he just was amazed at the how well it handled, and the RTT is a different car altogether from its old normal 1600 R2, and he got on really well with it, and he it looks like he's going to be super quick, to be honest, looking at what I was seeing in front of me. So I only wish him the best of luck, because he has had a horrid time in the past, and he just needs that bit of luck to go his way, and I think he'll come out with the results that everyone kind of knows and expects he can do, really.
Yeah, I think we are, you know, genuinely all rooting for him. And again, we've got to be dead careful, because we know we're downloaded all over the world, and we do appreciate every download. We do get a little bit UK-centric from time to time, but we do root for our boys, because, you know, I can remember Ocean starting out, and, you know, I've competed against him and stuff like that. So there is always that relationship, and I'm sure it's the same for you, Mike, as well. Now, moving on from what you were doing with regards to testing, has he been doing some driver coaching with your drivers as well?
Yeah, he sat out with Umberto, who's in our R2T. He's done a bit of tuition with him. He's just really good at sort of, you know, sitting down, knuckling down, trying to get everyone to get the most speed out of the car going into corners, sort of, you know, usual slow in, fast out, because he's super neat and tidy. So that's one thing that he's been trying to sort of teach Umberto. We've had lots of other people working with us as well. It's been so busy over the coming sort of months. Obviously, we've got we'll touch base on the BRC, but Chris Ingram's been helping us out with a few of the drivers, and we've had Adam Gould coming down, and a few of the MSA Academy, James Rosencroft and stuff. We always sort of they sort of help out our drivers as well. So it's been a really good sort of couple of weeks, to be honest. Just moving forwards to the this DMAC Championship, we had another guy come over and use the car, who was Dylan Van Way, and again he was someone who surprised me at how quick he was in the car.
Again, I think there is such a glut of drivers that are doing this DMAC, and I think they probably could have filled another 10 cars, to be honest with you, because we've just been making reference to the fact that it's kind of an invitational thing. But I think Dylan, I can't think whether... I don't know whether it was Craig Parry, who of course is who sat with Elfin now. I'm not too sure whether he sat with Dylan. Somebody sat with Dylan. I'm sure one of the British co-drivers.
Guys, Andrew Edwards, who co-drives for Umberto, he's Dylan's normal co-driver.
Right, okay.
Obviously, that's where the connection lies with getting Dylan over, and he had a test with us as well just before he flew out to Portugal. Craig has sat with Dylan as well when Andrew wasn't around, but. It's again. It was sort of arrive and fly in, fly out type thing. He flew in on Sunday morning. We picked him up from the airport, took him down to our local test venue, and he got out in the car. Did a good few miles, and unfortunately we had a bit of an issue with the car, so it was cut a little bit short, more than he would have liked. But then he just hopped back on the plane the following day and was off in Portugal. But again, he showed super speed from the off, so I was very impressed with him and what he showed as well. So I think it's going to be close between everyone out of the 10 there, to be honest. It's going to be a very tight competition.
I tell you what, it all sounds very impressive from your little workshop, because, you know, we've made reference to this before, and as I say, you're a mate, so I can probably say this, is that, you know, when I'm listening to you, you know, you're beaming with pride, you've got your British Rally Championship squad now, and you've got, you know, drivers flying in to do tests with you and things like that. Now, that's not the team I remember 2-3 years ago when we were rallying together. You know, what's happened, and you know, is it took you by surprise? What's kind of changed?
It has. Maybe we're not charging enough. I don't know. It's been really good. It's just it's sort of all spiraled really since we got our own R2. I mentioned previously on the show that just the feedback from people and just everyone's sort of wanting to get involved, and the BRC really, really helped in terms of we got our R2T immediately. We had multiple inquiries of people who wanted to get involved with the DMAC Junior Championship, and then the drivers that wanted to do it, and then because we ran the R2s, they just sort of come on board. And in terms of our team, they're always going to pick and choose events, it's always been busy. And like I say, right now in the workshop we've got 6, maybe 7 R2s in the workshop. It's just crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. But no, it's been good, and people just contacting us really. It's, you know, word of mouth helps, and providing a good service, that also goes a long way, I suppose.
It's one of those, isn't it? Because you knew at the beginning of the year, in January, you knew you were going to have 5 cars in the BRC. And I know you wanted to, obviously, like any good businessman, you want your business to progress and grow and things like that. Is there a fear of it getting too big too soon? Is that fear? Can I need to keep a rein on it a little bit?
We have to be careful, don't get me wrong. There are times when we've had people who want us to service in events, and you just have to say, unfortunately, we're not able to. We do like to help people as much as we can, so... For instance, there's a driver that we said, you know, you see if you can request a sort of service next to us, and we'll, you know, we're here to talk to people. So if they do want to pick our brains about various things, then we will do. But no, you have to be careful about what you do. In a way, it helps when some drivers don't do events and others do other events. It was always going to be a case. The first one, I think we had 6 cars out, which was certainly a handful, but we got through it, and the lads we've got around us are great, so that obviously helps a long way as well.
Do you know, and again, I guess, just looking at it from, obviously we've known each other a long time, so it feels a bit odd sometimes when you interview somebody or talk to somebody on a program when you've known them for a long time, you know some of the answers that you're going to ask the questions to, but I've seen you kind of change as well over this period of time, and I guess you've had to. Do you recognise the changes now in running a professional rally team as opposed to running effectively, you know, your own programme, doing national events, and, you know, just having a couple of people tag on the back of it, you know, which was all very well and good, but there's a massive difference, isn't it? It's almost, if we were going to use kind of probably a football analogy, you know, we're getting into the championship now, aren't we, as opposed to playing in, you know, the kind of non-league, kind of semi-professional. That would equate the differences.
Yeah, no, it is. That's exactly right. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of organisation that goes into it, and I've myself have sort of had to sort of you know, you ask for help where you need it, and you move forward and take advice, and you make sure you step in the right direction. Obviously, myself, I think you'll agree, over the years, you know, you just maturity, and you mature through the years, and you find the right path, really. But I think it is right. You look around at some of the setups around, and people are spending vast amounts of money, and obviously we don't claim to be that sort of premiership, shall we say, club at the moment, if you want to put it in that sort of analogy. But we like I say, we pride ourselves on service, and we do what we can to help as much as possible, really. And I think that goes a long way, and a lot of people sort of, all we've had is good feedback. So there will be some big issues and problems along the way, but it's how you get around those issues and problems that sort of makes the future brighter.
You always want to be judged on that. So moving forward, we've got a busy rest of the BRC campaign. We're not quite at the midway point. We're kind of somewhere in no man's land with the 7-round championship, but we're kind of nearly at the midway point. Moving forward, rest of 2016, early 2017, what are we aiming for?
So for us, obviously, BRC is now, like I say, halfway point. We lost Josh for a couple of rounds just purely he wanted to try an R2T, which we didn't have available. So he's back again for the next foreseeable rounds, back in his old car. And we will, so we've got sort of a full squad back on the next coming rounds. So BRC is obviously going to stay busy. Trying to tie up a couple of deals, to be honest, with some people who want to follow the DMAC WRC in an R2T. So I won't mention any names, but we're trying to, like I say, just finalise a few issues, which will hopefully get us and see us maybe out on possibly Poland, Finland, and then Spain and GB perhaps. But we'll see. We would like to go out and to get a suntan on an event would be nice, rather than sitting around in the snow and rain, to be honest. Yeah, that'll be biting your nails in the snow and rain. It's always better to bite your nails in the sun, I suppose. So it'd be nice to get out and you know, try and run along some of the WRC rounds. So that's our aim, really, just sort of try and get our toe in the door in some of the WRC events. That'll be ideal.
Sun, sangria and service, there you go.
Yeah, I think it won't be sun and sangria while the event's on. We might have to add on a couple of days of holiday after the event, I think, before we head back, I suppose. That's the only way that's going to happen.
Good man. Listen, Mike, it's lovely to catch up, mate, and it's great to hear the team are progressing, and obviously wish you the very best of luck with that, and we'll catch you up again very soon. Okay,
thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us on Absolute Rally, Mike. All the best.
No worries. Cheers.
Take care.
Absolute left at wall and Absolute King. Absolute King for 200.
This is Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. And welcome back to Absolute Rally, friend of the show. We've had him on, probably I should have had him on more, in all honesty, but there you go. But he's a busy man, but we've got him this week anyway. Trevor Agnew, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Hi, Tony. Hi, everyone.
Genuinely, I've been dying to get you back on. The reason, there's loads of reasons why we can talk to you, because you're such a fascinating character anyway, but one of the reasons why I want to get you back on, and we talked about it at the top of the show, Jack and I, with regards to the feature, which I know Jack was kind of part of, so it's good that perhaps he's not part of this bit. And I know you're listening, Jack, now thinking, why shouldn't it be? Because I thought you did a very good job, along with Trevor. We're going to talk about the live stream coverage on the Circuit of Ireland. Well done, mate. How did that one come about?
It was a conversation with Bobby Willis at Rally Group Britain last year. I said, there's anything I could do, don't be afraid to pick up the phone. And literally 3 weeks out, he phoned up and he said, what do you think of this idea? And it was an idea at that point. He had some infrastructure in place. The guys that were working on the technical side of things were progressing it. But literally 3 weeks out, we didn't have anything. A week out, we didn't have a studio. The night before, the guys did an all-nighter to get everything ready. And it's an incredible effort by probably 40 people to put it all together. But the man who committed to it, and the man who fired the money into it, was Bobby Willis, the event director of the Circuit of Ireland Rally. He was passionate about it. I, as a rally fan, understand it and get it. I think live streaming is the way that we're definitely going to go forward. I know WRC tried it a little bit. They still have the cameras in the service parts and things like that. But as a rally fan, for me, the model was the Northwest 200, which has just ran back in Northern Ireland over the weekend there. And the year before, I watched the live stream of that, and I thought, this is definitely the future, where you can have it on your smartphone, on your tablet, on your computer. You actually stand at the side of the road and watch the rally progress, get all the results, etc., etc. And the whole power of that, I thought, is absolutely brilliant, and that's what I wanted to get involved in it. And really, the plan this year was two things, really, to prove the concept would work. And fair play to Bobby, he was able to negotiate with Eurosport Events, who run the ERC, and also just to prove that our wee country in Northern Ireland can do it. And those are the two main goals, that this is the future. Let's have a go at it. And with certainly plenty of volunteers from a technical point of view. The main technical guy was Stuart Ogg, who put everything together for us. Peter Hamill was the producer, in the studio. And again, did an absolutely fantastic job on it. Paul McCauley, who used to head up a lot of RPM's productions, who were the company in Ireland, Plum Tyndall's company, used to do all the TV for Ireland. So the team was fantastic. And then, of course, with a bit of convincing, we've got John Desborough on board, we've got Lisa O'Sullivan doing stage end reporting together with Seb Marshall. And then we had our social media corner with Ryan McLean in there. All of that literally, Tony, came together in the last week. There was nothing in before. We were making stuff up as we went. Every time I'd look at the monitor, there'd be a new graphic on there that I hadn't seen before. That's the sort of level. The guys had sleeping bags in the studio, so they'd take time off, they'd run a bit of ET, and they'd get their head down for 10 or 15 minutes. That's how close it was to the gauge. So to produce what we did and get the feedback that we got, I think we proved the model, number one, and a lot of fans certainly fed back to us how much they enjoyed it.
You and I kind of spoke a little bit beforehand, I think probably 24 hours before it all went live, and I don't know whether this is your old co-driver kind of style, but you seemed incredibly calm when we had that conversation. And I must admit, obviously you were asking me a few things and we were bouncing a few ideas around and stuff like that, but when I put the phone down, I thought, I don't think I could be that calm knowing I was about to anchor a live stream, you know. And I've done live stream presenting, and I've done live TV stuff, and I've done live radio, and there's nothing like, what's the best way of describing it? You never meet a constipated live presenter is probably the best way and the politest way I can put that. How did you remain as serene as what you did?
Well, it was a big coup to get John Desborough on board. To come to Ireland was a great convention. To meet a guy called Willie John Dolan, who John actually co-drove, as I did, as Michael Orr has in the past, as Chris Patterson has in the past. And that was one of his conditions, that he'd come. We needed to meet up with Willie John Dolan. We did that on a Saturday night. But to get John on board with all his experience, and he keeps you calm. He also takes a mick as well, which is great. We had great fun. And that was the ultimate thing. We wanted to have fun with it. You know, there's no point in going and doing something that's really serious. And, of course, there's a lot of information that you needed to find, and I certainly wasn't as prepped as I'd like to have been. But there were a few dramas, as you imagine, the week running up to it, not least of which had a good friend go into hospital. So I had to go and visit him and a few bits and pieces like that, which you don't plan for. But there was lots of people like you, like Andrew Coley, who give me lots of advice, and I said, but I always do that, Plum Tyndall, people like that who have done it, go get the information, find out what I need to do, and then when you feel that you're prepped to a certain degree where you can talk, and you have to remember, we went on the Friday, the show started at 8:30 and we finished at 10:30 at night. And there wasn't that much VT in there, because there was a lot of VT promised to us that didn't appear, so we had to fill a lot. And you know, at times you do run a little bit lean on things to say. But the studio guest we had, of course, the star was Jack Benyon. It was literally just the day before, I think I said to Jack, would you be interested? He said, yeah. I said, come down, do the first stage and we'll see how it goes. So he sat in with us, did that. He texted straight away, right, can I go back tomorrow? I said, of course you can. That was brilliant. With Ian Besant, who sat in alongside me for the National Rally of the Circuit of Ireland. Now, Ian knows everything. He does stage end reporting. He was doing that on the Circuit of Ireland for local radio station Q. And then, of course, you get the legends in, such as Plum Tyndall. And BD Crawford telling us about the Circuit of Ireland retro that they had in Killarney the weekend before. And for me, the most fantastic story is Paddy Hopkirk. I just had this idea that we need to get Paddy on board in some way. And I phoned him up literally on the Saturday at lunchtime. It was just another one of those ideas on the hoof. I said, Paddy, would you be interested in coming on and explain what we're hoping to do? He said, yeah, no problem. He says, I'm in my flat in London. I'll get up the road. And phoned me back about 4 o'clock, and sure enough, 4 o'clock we were on air, and the phone's ringing, and it goes to answer phone, and now it rings again. So, but eventually, when I picked up the message, it was Paddy saying, "What the hell is going on?" sort of thing. But when we got him on, he said, "Should we do this on FaceTime?" And this is a man who's 82 years of age, and yeah. His idea to do it on FaceTime, for me, that just cracked me up. So we managed to get Plum behind one of the laptops, and Plum interviewed Paddy Hopkirk. It's all up there on the live stream at the minute. You can go and have a look at it on circuitofireland.net. It's on day two. Towards the end of day two, you'll be able to find it. And it's Plum Tyndall interviewing Paddy Hopkirk via FaceTime, and that's technology, and we're able to stream that straight away. Again, it was just a case of making upstairs, talking to producer Pete and saying, can we do this? He said, yep, and then we did it, and let's see how it goes. Wow. I was literally doing it all live, and I think that was part of the attraction. The amount of feedback and the comments and the tweets and the Facebook status updates that we got as a result of that was phenomenal, and that's the sort of thing you can do, Tony. You know, I had a nephew of mine who was stood on the stage when Sam Moffat went off. He texted me literally as soon as it happened. We phoned him on air. He talked us through what happened, and literally a minute later, he sent us a video of Sam Moffat going off, which we streamed straight away. So from Sam going off, unfortunately, for him, of course, to us getting something that was broadcast throughout the world, 100,000 streaming, 130 different countries we got that video of Sam Moffat crashing on there, I'd say, within 6 or 7 minutes. That's wow. The part of it.
Now, it seems like, I suppose it's an obvious question is, it's going to happen again, and can it be rolled out? Has this now kind of changed the face of how we can watch rallying, and are other people now starting to kind of take heed of this?
I'd definitely like to think so. You know, the information that we need now, we're trying to acquire, is all the behind scenes stuff, all the stuff that you can't get on the internet. So if you can find a way of getting that across to people, you know, it's the exclusive side of things that nobody else has. And you know, if we had to do it again next week, we would do it, you know, a lot differently. There's loads more content we could put in there. You could line up a lot more interviews. There's so many characters in Ireland that you get involved as well. You would do it differently, and you could make a really good, strong program out of it, you know, as opposed to sort of putting it together as you did it. The cost, of course, is the biggest implication with it. There were a lot of volunteers doing what we did, doing ourselves. You know, we wanted to get in, get it done, and just lead this whole technology changer. You know, the word game changer came up quite a bit through a lot of the comments and even the feedback from legends such as Plum Tyndall, who was going to go and watch the rally on the Friday, and it was a little bit wet, so he stayed at home and watched the live stream instead. And there were a lot of people sent us messages like that. Mark Higgins, Gary Jennings, John McLean, a good mate of mine, people who were all planned to do a lot of stuff over the weekend, and they just got glued to it. They couldn't put it down. They couldn't leave it. And even Michael Orr, we went to see Michael Orr on the Sunday, and he said, it's so different to radio, because on radio, you can have it on the background, whereas even if it's just a live picture of a stage with nothing on it, he says, you're drawn to it. You have to watch it. It's almost mesmerizing, he said. And the plan would be to do it. I'm going out to Portugal tomorrow. Bobby Willis will be out there. We'll sit down, we'll have a chat and talk through, you know, now we've got a little bit more around the costings and the budget for it, and see how we can do it. Of course, Bobby was keen to roll it out and to other ERC events as well, and there's a couple of ideas around that, but it's still very much in the infancy. But, you know, as a concept, I think we proved it worked. Certainly the feedback we've had from true rally fans, they enjoyed it. So, I'd definitely like to be involved in doing more of it. It's just, it gets back to the usual thing, Tony, it's down to the numbers and down to those people who see the value in it. And for me, there's definitely a lot of value in it.
Fantastic. Listen, well done. I doff my cap. But unfortunately, I couldn't see as much of it as what I wanted to watch. Unfortunately, circumstances. I was tied up, unfortunately, with some family issues. But the bits and pieces I did see, it was great. And again, game changer it was the word that I was left with as well. I haven't spoke to people, obviously. I spoke to Jack quite a bit about it as well, and obviously other people who are no rally fans who watched it. And there seems to be this kind of the worms almost turning that it doesn't matter that it's not, and I mean this with the greatest of respect, by the way, it doesn't matter it's not polished.
Yeah, no, you're right, and that's the appeal to it. Again, it's that, I don't know, there's certainly events that you watch like that, and I keep going back to the Northwest 200 where you see all these glitches happening, and as part of it, you know, you feel that you're behind the scenes, and that's what people want. They want to be part of something that is exclusive and different. And certainly there's a lot of polishing we could have done from my point of view, you know, just simple little things. I used to be told that I was quite serious, and so I put a little sticker, a little post-it in the room, just to remind me to smile, a little smile on it. Yeah. And yeah, one of the first things that Desmond did was take it off and show everybody that I'd put it up there. So you can't really take yourself too serious when you've got that, you know. And I just thought we had a brilliant team, and hopefully we get a chance to do it again and do it in a little bit more financial clout.
Good man, good man. Listen, you've just mentioned you're off to Portugal. What's going on in your world on Rally Portugal? Are you doing stage end?
I'm not, not this time. It's just there's a gap come up in my calendar, and my wife's away to Spain on Thursday, so I thought it was really cheap. The flights were 100 quid, accommodation's 100 euros, so I thought I'll go out and have a wee look. There's a couple of people I want to meet. As I mentioned, Bobby Willis will be there, a couple of other people around the coaching idea I want to have a chat with. So it'll just be a nice little trip away. If the weather's nice, it'll be great. And of course, what a fascinating competition it's going to be on the back of what we saw in Argentina. With Chris Meek back as well, Yari Matti will be on a mission. Hayden, we know how quick he went in Argentina and that fantastic result he's coming in on the back of. But then there are others, of course. You've got Mickelson, who wanted to put in a charge in this one. He's familiar with the rally. Mads Osberg has won it in the past. And of course, Danny Sordo's found a bit of form as well. Just a few to name there. That so the competition at the front, considering the champ's road position again and the issue he has, is going to be fascinating, I think.
I think again, and you know, we're going to hopefully all be in well. I've been speaking to Hayden, and Hayden's going to be on with us next week, and he's always great value when he comes on. And I'm not just saying it because he's one of the drivers who willingly comes on, but he's great value, and I think we all. I don't think there was many people that didn't, you know, weren't kind of cheering for him, screaming at the TV screen, watching the live stream on WRC Plus when we were watching that, you know, the final stage, the power stage, and to see him win that stage and win it comfortably, I thought was phenomenal. But I think you and I both have a feeling that perhaps Ogier thought he'd had him done.
Yeah, without doubt. You know, I was lucky enough. I was up in the WRC Live studio in London doing some studio work and punditry for the guys, and watching the splits and everything that happened, knowing full well that it was 3:15 in the morning in New Zealand, and all the people in Geraldine, South Island, New Zealand, everybody, the New Zealand motorsport, you know, the outpouring that happened, were just willing Hayden to get through that day. Starting off with 29.8-second lead, and then down to 22 seconds. And then Mina Clavero, which is an incredible stage. It's the one of the moonscape. When he finished that and he was 2.6 seconds in the lead, he sounded like a broken man. And that was a concern, you know. Ogier, we know his history with power stages. There's very few that he doesn't win. And, you know, having taken that, having, you know, the little bit of a tiff that they had the night before after the end of day press conference, where they went a little bit face to face in some heated debate around whether Ogier should have mentioned his road position as part of that press conference. And that is, I think, was the main reason that fired Hayden up. I've read a couple of interviews about it. He does work with a guy called Gilbert Anoka, who is one of the top sports psychologists in New Zealand. He's made reference to that. He's the guy who turned around the All Blacks. And I think part of that also his, you know, his meticulous research about the last stage on the video with some help from a guy in Norway as well, I think it was. He went into it with a completely different mindset to most people were expecting. Now, the other thing with that, though, is, and we need to take this with a bit of caution, all credit to Hayden because he drove the door handles off that car. But nobody expected Ogier to finish that stage, that power stage in third, and get beaten by Danny Sordo as well. Now, watching it live, I don't know if you noticed it at all, but it seemed to be the polo was moving about a lot more than I was expecting. And whether he thought that he would be a little bit more cautious and he played it just right, so he wasn't going to break the car, he did comment Ogier at the end of the stage it was very rough. So whether he just bore in mind that he needed to win Argentina, that was the one rally he hadn't won. Whether he just misjudged it, we don't know, but we'll soon find out when we go to Portugal. Once the stage is clean again, when it's a fair fight, we'll see what the pace is compared with Ogier versus all the rest of them. But there's one driver we haven't mentioned so far, and that's Thierry Neuville, who's way off the pace, Tony, isn't it?
Again, I don't like to get into... I always feel like I give him a hard time, but it's almost like he's giving himself a hard time. And I think what's happening is, I think it's being almost amplified by his teammates, because I think, I genuinely, I must admit, probably this time last year, I probably thought, is Danny's kind of day, maybe he's come and gone now, and obviously Hayden was still fresh and new, and Kevin Abring was kind of, you know, weren't quite sure what was going to happen next, but they've all kind of took on their jobs purposely. Kevin Abring, of course, who's going to be coming back in a 2015 car on Rally Portugal, and he's doing all the testing work for the R5 car and for the new car as well. Danny seems to have got, you know, the rocket put on his back as well, where he seems to have pushed on again now, and obviously we've just been talking about Hayden, and I think all that has made Thierry look ordinary and clumsy, and I know he's not that. That's what I can't quite get my head around.
That's exactly that. You know, you mentioned Sordo last year. I was working on Sardinia for WRC Live, and at the end of the stage, he didn't seem that interested, Sordo. I don't know what it was on that particular rally, but it was very noticeable at the time, talking to Julian Porter about it and a few other people. But the transformation, what he had done towards the end of the year, and, you know, the turn of speed that he's had this year, he stepped it up a notch again, and he's there competing, he's winning stages. Thierry, he's had a few offs, there's no doubt about it. And again, he's not the only one over the years that's done that, and he will turn it around, there's no doubt about it. He will turn it around, but he just needs to focus a little bit differently in some way, you know. It's one of those things, Tony, where if the car starts to step out a little bit, the first thing you think is, oh no, here we go again. You don't have time to do that. These guys at the top level of the sport, it has to be natural. It has to be an unconscious thing where you automatically adjust into the car. And even before this event, he's had an off in testing. That's not going to help his confidence going into the rally. He just needs to get through an event and build up the speed bit by bit, but focusing on what he needs to deliver the best performance. Minimizing all the distractions, minimizing all the noise in his head, to quieten his mind, to get into that sweet spot, to get into the zone where the car feels part of him. And he's a long way from that at the minute, from what I can see. And it's an opportunity for him and Nicolas Gilsoul to do that, to prove that they've still got the speed. He will win a World Championship Rally, there's no doubt about that in my head as regards the speed he had prior to all of this happening. But it's been going on a long time now. He needs to sort it out because his teammates are starting to outperform.
I just wonder, and you know, I think we had that year with M Sport where I think he was, you know, M Sport kind of grounds the drivers, doesn't it? I think it was almost flippantly he was called Thierry Neuville, I think, when he was at M Sport, kind of just to kind of make life almost normal for him. And whether it's Malcolm's man management that helped him, I just wonder whether, you know, Hyundai is probably a much bigger team, I think it's fair to say, than what M Sport is, and maybe the love is being spread around all the drivers by the management. Maybe Thierry might just need a little bit of man management, a little bit of, you know, arm around the shoulder. You know, we always hear about it with football managers and stuff like that. You know, there's more, you know, man management is such a big thing. And now when we're getting to this level where everything is under scrutiny, I just wonder whether to kind of take a step back and somebody needs to put their arm around them and say, look, you know, you've got it. You've got it. You know, you don't need to try so hard. It'll come.
Yeah, maybe somebody is doing that and it's not working. But I don't know what help he has from the mental approach to the sport, but you certainly need help with it, as we've talked about before. And I know you're an advocate of it. You cannot commit to winning world championships without that type of help. And most of the top guys have got it now in varying degrees. Whether it's just trying to, you know, enforce a positive mindset and get rid of some of the negativity. But I don't know what help Jerry has had or is having. But from where he is now, if he's serious about getting back up there and winning the World Championship, he needs to get somebody to help him with it, I think.
I think that obviously he's got two rounds now, the next two gravel rounds, he's not nominated as a point scorer. So I suppose you could say that, you know, High and Dive's management are giving him those two events almost as give-me's to go away and sort yourself out, drive the rallies, focus on getting some results. And yeah, I just got this fear for him, though, Trevor. I really have that. The fact that, you know, everybody's kind of up to speed with the 2015 car, or sorry, the 2016 car now, which obviously should have been about in 2015 for Hyundai. But we're going to have a new car again come January, and you know we're now midway. Well, in terms of time wise, we're midway through the year. Obviously, the events don't quite balance out like that, but feels like he still hasn't quite got his head around this car.
Yeah, you mentioned the cars. You know, when Hyundai changed, they were going to have the three-door car, then it became a five-door car, if we've got that the right way around. But there was a lot of disillusionment, I think, with TRA back at that time. And since then, I remember the first time really, you know, I had a break from World Championship for a long time. The first time I went back to it was in Sweden last year to do the stage end stuff. And he was on a complete mission. He was absolutely flying. He almost won the rally. And from there, a couple of events later, it just disappeared. And the theory that we know and the speed that he has, you know, he had bursts of it, but the consistency just disappeared. And from that point, whatever's happened, you know, it could be that disillusionment with it at the time with the team or whatever it may have been, that he took his eye off the ball, and whatever he's done since hasn't worked. Is, you know, no matter what way you twist it, it hasn't worked. He would have expected to be winning a rally last year, going on his performance in Sweden, which was absolutely fantastic at the time. And it didn't happen. And even you talk about them releasing him to learn rallies. He rallied Great Britain last year. It was the same thing. He wasn't there to score points, but he had that massive accident as well, you know. So, yeah, he needs help. He needs somebody to guide him through it. And the sooner it happens, the better, because he's just too good a talent. I absolutely think he's got the speed. Obviously, he's got the talent. He can make it. He just needs to get his mind around it.
It'll be interesting to see what happens on Rally Portugal. Listen, before I let you go, I just want to ask you about a very quick thing and a headline that's out today in MN. And Rally GB and Circuit of Ireland could rotate in WRC. As a man that's obviously passionate about the Circuit of Ireland, and also a man that's competed and been around Wales Rally GB and whatever you want to call it for probably 20 plus years, can you see that?
You never rule out anything when Bobby Willis is involved. of course, we know the issues that Rally Wales potentially has, and Rally GB has with Rally GB. And of course, it can only be one round in the UK. It would be two UK rallies we're talking about here. So, rotating events, does it work? I'm not sure. Look at Australia, look at New Zealand, and what happened there. But there's no doubt about it. Northern Ireland as a country, if we had the opportunity to put together a world rally, then we'd definitely have a go at it. But of course, Rally Great Britain, Wales Rally Great Britain, with the Wales backing, is definitely something that they've got their backing for 3 years, as I understand it. So, it'll go ahead. I've no doubt that they'll resolve the issues that they have. But the other thing you have to remember as well, Tony, is, you know, going to run a World Championship rally and the money that's involved with that, you have to put together an interim rally as well, which is one step above what we have with the Circuit of Ireland at the minute. So from an infrastructure point of view, there is more work to be done around that. But don't put it past it if Bobby Willis has anything
I'll
to do with
what,
it.
I'll tell you what, though. Talking about interim rallies, I seem to remember the interim rally for China last year didn't quite go according to what everybody wanted, and yet here we see it in the calendar. So, just thought I'd put that out there. But there you go. Listen, thank you so much for joining us, and listen, we'll get you back on again soon, because as I say, there's loads of other stuff I'd love to talk to you about, but we're trying to suppress the podcast. We haven't got all day streaming like you had, so so we're trying to suppress the podcast to keep it under an hour and a half at the moment, because I'm not too sure whether people want to hear my voice for an hour and a half. I'm just very conscious of that.
Yeah, it's an easy thing. The job you guys do is absolutely fantastic. You know, it's something where I mostly listen to it, either if I'm walking along the seafront here where I live in Kent, or in the car, I listen to it as a stream in the car. And it's absolutely great to have this level of, just the debate, even among the three of you at the start of the show, is always really interesting to hear. But the guests you get involved, and again, like a Hayden coming on to it, probably because he wants to have a run and round Subaru.
Yeah, exactly. there's definite a mindset there to get out in that Group A beastie. I think so. Listen, Trev, it's been a joy, mate. Have a cracking time out in Portugal. Enjoy yourself, and we'll catch up with you very soon.
Cheers, Tony. Thank you.
All the best. Thanks, Trev.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. We've got our MIA, we've got our missing in action, we've got our hero. We don't know what he's been up to, but finally Ryan Champion checks into this podcast. Ryan Champion, hello.
Hello. I'd love to be able to tell you what I was up to, but you know, it's top secret and all that, so I can't.
Yeah, these cars don't clean themselves, do they?
it hasn't involved any car cleaning.
Right, okay, all right.
Even mine.
Okay, all right, fair dues. You probably need it when you return from wherever you are. Anyway, but that's it. It is so secret. You have actually put something on Facebook, by the way, just to let you know.
No, I'm at Goodwood this week, so working at Goodwood House, Goodwood Circuit as well, and staying in a lovely Goodwood hotel. So it could be worse.
Live the dream. Right. So you've missed all the other stuff, which you'll have to listen to the podcast now and get it. But we've had a great time. We had Jack at the top, who came to the fore obviously after the comments last week of work experience, which I didn't live down. He was strong at the top. You, some may say you might not have been missed. Not me though. Not me. Just for the record.
I find that hard to believe. Don't be building Jack's part up too much.
No, mate, he's on a mission at the moment. Yeah, because he got bigged up at the beginning of the program, and then we did the stuff about the live stream coverage with Trevor Agnew, and of course Jack managed to blag his way into that as well. He gets about that boy. He does get about. It has to be said.
It's the hairdo.
He gets where water wouldn't, as some might say.
It's the boy band hairdo, definitely.
It is. To be fair, do you know what? He's gonna love the podcast all the way up to this section, isn't he? I can just see it now. I can see the tweets and the text messages already. But anyway, listen, as I said, we've got Rally Portugal coming up, and we've already covered it, but I know Ryan Champion will have some thoughts on Rally Portugal, so I thought I'd give you a couple of minutes before you get whisked off in your black tie to dinner to get off your chest what you want to talk about Rally Portugal and any other business.
Well, Rally Portugal, I think that what I'm really looking forward to is seeing Chris Meek back in action. Obviously, we miss seeing him in regular competition, but you know, it's for the greater good, isn't it? You know, it'll be fantastic to see the new Citroën next year, and you know, let's hope that they can take on Volkswagen in a straight fight next year. But it'd be good to see him back in action. As you were talking about earlier, I know he's been playing down his chances, but at the end of the day, we know he's a top line driver. He knows Portugal, and you know, I really hope to see him back up there mixing it.
Yeah, I think one thing he hasn't been short of, which over the years he probably has been, is seat time. Obviously, he's done an incredible amount of Ks in this new beastie, and I must admit, I'm still not quite taken with the new car. We spoke quite a lot about the Toyota, but I'm still not quite taken with the new Citroën, I'll be honest with you.
I guess it's difficult to see, isn't it? It's still relatively early in terms of the development of body kits, and obviously livery has such an impact on the car as well. So I guess we'll see a little bit later in the year what the final cars look like, but whatever it looks like, it's as we've talked about before on this show, Citroën with a top line effort means serious business, and you know, that'll be great to see when that comes, but let's hope Chris is right in the mix in Portugal.
I think so. Now, running order, which is something which obviously Hayden and Sebastian Ogier kind of went head to head over this, of course, quite literally. And what are your thoughts as a man who could pedal a bit in his day, it has to be said. What are your thoughts with regards to Hayden now being further up the order? Do you think his outlook will change a little bit, or do you still think Hayden being Hayden, by the way, all being well, he's going to be with us next week as well after Portugal, do you think Hayden being Hayden will just go out and just drive the doors off it?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the only way he knows how to go rallying, isn't it? You know, as we've talked about, Hayden wears his heart on his sleeve. He puts everything into what he does. And I just think he'll go out there and give it his best. Will it be enough when he hasn't got road position in his favour? I certainly wouldn't rule him out. Just, you know, the speed is getting better and better. The performance of the Hyundai is ever improving. It'll obviously be tougher, but I certainly think he'll be up at the sharp end with, you know, I think we'll see Jari Matti up there. We'll certainly see Ogier up there, and I think we'll see Chris Meek up there, and I imagine Mickelson will be in the mix as well. So you know, it could be a good battle. Let's hope so.
Yeah, as I say, we will be watching, and of course, all being well, Hayden, bless him, did drop us a little DM last week about apologies for not coming on after Argentina, and he's been up to his ears in it as well, you can imagine. So I said, if there's any chance you come off the Portugal, and as ever with Hayden, not a problem, mate. So all being well, as I say, bearing time differences in his travel and stuff, we are going to get him on. Right, any other business? Are you ready with yours? I told you to have a stonk in any other business. I've got mine, and I've kept it to one side because Jack did his. He did his on the Junior World Rally Championship at the top of the show, and I've kept mine so we could top and tail us. So I could do mine with you because it feels odd not doing it when you're not there. Have you got yours?
I have. And this week it's another question. We seem to be developing questions in any other business. And this is it's one for you. It's one I'd like to throw open to our listeners and see what they think. Homologated rally cars. Do we need them?
Ooh.
Now, and I'll tell you my thinking behind this. You know, I was thinking about it recently. We obviously have these new regulation of World Rally cars coming. It is obviously the cars do go through an homologation process, but the cars are already nearly £500,000 or whatever they might be. The new cars are going to be even more expensive. You know, they are incredibly expensive items, and some of that is obviously down to the homologation process. Could we have, I don't want to say prototype cars, but could we have a more cost-effective form? I think most touring car championships around the world now, they don't have homologated cars. You look at the British Touring Car Championship, for example, obviously closer to home for us, but they have all these different types of cars in there, all fighting it out at the front, but there is no homologation. There's a lot of control parts involved, so they can, you know, they can control the costs. And my question for this week is, could we produce a more cost-effective formula than what we have currently, and could that maybe be some form of non-homologated car? And what I mean by that is, like I said, I don't mean home-built prototypes, but if we look at the model taken, say, by the British Touring Car Championship and also some other championships around the world that tightly control their regulations, but it allows an equal formula with a lot of people competing at the front.
The irony behind that question, Ryan Champion, right, the irony behind it was when we were doing the run-through of the entry list for Rally Argentina, there was a whole host of local drivers in these protos. And I asked you what they were, and you went blank on me.
Well, that's because I didn't know the answer.
It's just funny that 2-3 weeks down the line, it becomes your any other business. But still, there you go. My any other business actually probably tags onto that a little bit. And I'll explain why now, because we had Drew on last weekend, Craig Drew, last week's programme rather. David Higgins, obviously co-driver, and they won the 30th anniversary Olympus Rally, which... mega event, and obviously Drewy made reference to this. Travis wasn't out on this one, so perhaps they didn't have the tussle they've had certainly on the first couple of rounds. But that's one thing that happens in the Rally America series, isn't it? You know, they open up the rules, they open up the regulations, and those cars are just mega. They're like night and day compared to what, you know, a Subaru is today when you think about it. You know, Vermont Sports Car, who've got a fantastic history in the Rally America series, because going way back when David was originally over there with Mitsubishi, they ran the Mitsubishi program over there. And, there's no homologation there. So I don't know. I think someone like David Higgins would probably say, absolutely, it'd be a no-brainer. And plus, he would probably get to bring his Subaru out to play in other places other than America. So I don't know. And the reason why I say this is that I do believe in structure, and maybe it's my OCD or whatever, but I think homologation I'm not thinking the top line now, I'm thinking the lower rungs rather of the ladder, and I suppose R2, you know, R3 cars and things like that. It does give some kind of structure of how far you can go with those cars. And what I would fear is that there may be some manufacturers that would perhaps look at the lower rungs of the ladder and absolutely, you know, just throw the kitchen sink at it for the sake of a two-wheel drive 1600 car, as an example. So I don't know. I don't quite know how we'd figure it out. Would you still have the structure in there for the lower categories?
Yeah, you'd have to have, wouldn't you? And like I said, if I come back to my example that set me thinking about this, the British Touring Car Championship is front-wheel drive. They're they're 2-litre turbocharged. I think it's still 2-litre. Somebody will put me right. But 2-litre turbocharged engines, but they're very strictly controlled. But you have a lot of control parts, and you fit those control parts to whichever body shell you choose. You don't even have to use the engine out of that particular car. You can use a spec engine, but it is still very strictly controlled in what you can do. And like you said, it would be very different with the more production-based cars, if you like. I just wondered, it was more, my thoughts were really about the top-line cars, and just, you know, I can only see the price of these cars is going to get out of control again.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure I had the answer to my own question, but...
Maybe someone will get involved. I'll tell you who will know.
Go on.
Jack Bengen. But Jack will know.
Yeah, he will.
Jack will tell us next week. And on that bombshell, Ryan Champion, you go and get your black tie on, because you're being James Bond tonight. And you go and enjoy the rest of your... Will you be back with us next week in normal?
I will, but I'll be back to normal next week.
Fantastic. Listen, thanks, mate, as ever, for joining us on the end of the podcast at the very, very least. Thank you to everybody who's downloading us, and the numbers are rising, and it is really, really great to see that people are spreading the love genuinely. And as I say, I always say this, you know where we live. It's @Absolute_Rally on Twitter and facebook.com/AbsoluteRally. And we are working on a few other new bits and pieces, which hopefully will maybe entice a few more people into joining the Absolute Rally family. But more about that over the next few weeks. Anyway, listen, Ryan Champion, same time, same place next week then?
I will be here for the full show next week.
Fantastic. Look forward to it. Thanks for the download, folks. Speak to you next week.